politics without the soap opera, with unfiltered constitutional conservative truth. The Conservative Review with Daniel Horowitz.
And welcome back, fellow American patriots, standing at the ready to fight anew for our life, liberty, and property in ways our forefathers could never have imagined. Here at CR Podcast, this is your host, Daniel Horowitz, back here today for Friday, April 12th. And boy, are we fighting for liberty at a pivotal moment. We have never had a government that was at war with its people to this extent, that we now have documented for several years and probably going on a lot farther back than that, going after our privacy, going after our rights, using technology to spy on our communications simply because we oppose their policies. And we have a prominent program, this FISA 702, that expires April 19th. Now, it's a little bit complicated. Technically, it's recertified for the most part for another year, but the perception in politics is that it goes away. You simply by doing nothing, you have leverage. Okay, this is not, there's no excuse, oh, we don't have enough votes. You don't have to pass it. It's the other side that wants it reauthorized, the Biden administration. But there are a group of Democrats, particularly in the House, because of their own reasons, they don't want spying, you know, to rope in real terrorists, which they are, and, you know, they're Muslim buddies and whatever. So there's various reasons. We have bipartisan support. So the baseline expectation here is we could have completely blocked 702 authorization. And certainly with the simple messaging that if you're going to do it, and gather up information on Americans in order to go and search it and utilize it, you have to come back and get a warrant. And then as a second amendment would have been Warren Davidson's amendment, and we're going to have him coming up to do a deep dive into this, where the government cannot purchase data from private companies, which they all have, if it would otherwise require a warrant pursuant to the Fourth Amendment, if they were to do it. So making an end run with a third party, you know, shouldn't be any better. And then I would argue a third amendment should be criminal penalties, a cause of action against agents that violate this. Very simple. Trump's campaign was spied on. All Trump had to do was use his ironclad clout with the speaker and ownership of the speaker and ownership of the party and say, you will not pass a bill absent these reforms. Instead, we got very late in the game, a one-sentence thing at 2 in the morning, oh, don't reauthorize FISA. And I told you guys it was failure theater. And then right after I got off yesterday, got off the air, Jackie Heinrich from Fox News, she's the White House correspondent, Trump and Speaker Johnson expected to announce plan to renew FISA Section 702 tomorrow with a change requiring reauthorization every 2 years instead of 5 years. 2 years is a hell of a long time. The duration was never much of an issue. It's not like you're, you know, conceding one of the fundamentals on the issue there. And suddenly there's a little bit of an out, and now it's good. And now it's good. By the way, just so you know, there were some people, including our guests coming up, that were fighting this the last reauthorization in 2018. Who was president in 2018? Yes, Donald Trump. He's in his signing statement on January 19, 2018, not only did he sign it, but he actually said it wasn't strong enough. I would have preferred a permanent reauthorization of Title VII to protect the safety and security of the nation. By signing this act today, however, I am ensuring that this lawful and essential intelligence program will continue to protect Americans for the next 6 years. He wanted it to never sunset, by the way. Had he had his way, ironically, he's making a big deal now. Oh, we have a shorter sunset period. Ironically, had he had his way when he was president, we would have had no sunset whatsoever. Okay, so he agreed. Everyone's laughing out of, you know, Johnson saying, oh, I went into the skiff and now I see things differently. What do you guys want me to do today? Honest question. Email me, Daniel Horowitz at startmail.com. What am I supposed to do if there is a puppet in Johnson, but a puppet master in Trump? And ultimately, Trump is what matters, and Trump is the one who is persuadable. Right? Johnson doesn't care about what we think. Am I supposed to ignore the man at the top? And moreover, Johnson's going to do this again. Next week in the week or the week after with Ukraine. Trump fully supports Lend-Lease. Johnson's going to bring that to the floor. Am I supposed to join my colleagues like, oh, Johnson's screwing us? Well, it's kind of the man at the top. Why don't you take it to him? This is like the 20th issue since winning the nomination that Trump has moved to the left on. And I've had some private conversations with friends of mine in Congress, and they half agree, but then half apologize. Well, yeah, that's because Johnson convinced Trump to support Lend-Lease. I'm like, well, aren't you proving my point? So you're admitting the guy's an empty suit. So why don't you ratchet up the pressure? All the more so that you have to oppose Johnson and these other guys getting in his ear with equal and opposing force. Now, the fact that he himself is amendable to everything the swamp says, and you readily admit that, that's kind of an indictment of all you guys either remaining silent or downright supporting Trump in the primary, but whatevs. But it's all these excuses. Well, at least we got 2 years. But you get it for free simply by doing nothing. Plus, you actually have robust Democrat support. Now, this is very fluid. As we talk, Andy Biggs is going to put up his amendment to the bill that would require a warrant. Now, look, it might even pass because of the Democrat support, ironically. But here's the deal with that. I know they'll say that's an amazing thing to get it past the House. The bottom line is the Senate, where even a greater share of Republicans and Democrats are part of this kind of military-industrial, intel-industrial complex. So in other words, and the House has a lot more freelancers on both sides. So notice that the Biden administration and Senate Democrats are much more into this. There is a lot of House Democrats that, for their own reasons, oppose this and have always opposed it. So it might pass. But at the end of the day, what's clear is that Johnson is frantic. We cannot allow April 19th to go through without reauthorizing. Clearly, he has Trump's support. He's literally meeting with him today. And I want to get to that in a minute. How much support he has and how they're using the same old tactics of the GOP establishment that gave birth to MAGA, and now Trump is perfecting those very swampy things. Oh, chase the squirrel. Oh, here's a standalone bill. Oh, non-citizens voting. He's going to hold a whole press conference with Johnson today. But the Senate's going to balk at it. Now you might say, well, the House could balk at the Senate. They could, but they won't. Johnson will bring the Senate version to the floor. This is assuming the House does attach Biggs' amendment to it. And clearly, he will have Trump's support in doing that. So I wanna unpack some of the problems that I'm seeing with the interplay between Johnson and Trump on this issue, but it's going to play out with Ukraine. It's going to play out in every issue. It's going to play out every minute of the House GOP control until the election. And really, if you look at it, it's going to play out after the election, even if Trump were to win, because, you know, we already went through this. And then again, increasingly, it's unlikely Republicans will even have the presidency in the House. So now is the time to use this bipartisan leverage that you have on a single issue. But it all paints a very troubling picture that Trump is using his clout to help, not hinder, the swamp, and nobody wants to call it out. So if you don't do it, you're not going to get change from him. So bizarre. Few things are working in life, but one of the things that does is fast-growing trees. I simply adore this company. We've gotten a lot of rain in my part of the country, but April showers bring May flowers, and I know once the sun comes out, all the trees that my wife has planted from fastgrowingtrees.com will thrive in our yard because they promise a 30-day alive and thrive guarantee. Over 2 million happy customers that have ordered their fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants They have a lot of indoor options as well. They come to your door very quickly, all in great condition, so you don't have to transport it. And I just really love in what it's doing for my yard and my interior. If you want to spruce up your yard and your home today, this spring, Fast Growing Trees has the best deals online, plus an additional 15% off with promo code conservative. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using promo code conservative at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, promo code conservative. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply, so gobble up this deal while you still have it. So there is something very profound about this two-year thing that's very subtle but profound. It's part of a broader theme that everything going on is to accommodate the man and the presidency, even though it's less than 50% chance he'll even win. It's all about, oh, no, there's no need to fight. We don't want to. Notice the pattern. Notice Trump's position the last since Republicans have taken over the House. We don't need to fight on the debt ceiling. We don't need to fight on the budget. We don't need to fight on anything, the NDAA. Even things that you're not even holding up. It's not even like there'll be a government shutdown or a so-called default. Just don't reauthorize it. In the case of Ukraine, there's literally nothing. Just don't pass it. They need you to pass it. It's not like you need, it's not like we're trying to like get rid of the PREP Act or something. Okay, so you have to get that passed the Democrat Senate. You could say we don't have enough power. Here, they're willingly doing it. Because Trump doesn't want to pick a single fight. This man has inculcated himself with every swampy argument. The opposite of what you and I believe. That you have to run away from fights, especially something like this, which is so bipartisan and popular, to get a warrant on privacy. I mean, this cuts across all sorts of people. It makes no sense. But that's what it is. We can't pick a fight on any issue. Just wait until the election. Oh, so let's not do 5 years, 2 years. So I'll take care of it. I'll take care of it. But again, it's very unlikely you're going to win. And if this is your mentality, Trump, why is it going to change? Just so you know, everyone thinks Trump is this wild-eyed guy. You spied on my campaign. Screw you. He's actually not. He's very taken in by the same arguments that people are making fun out of Johnson with. Oh, I go into the skiff. I was told that all these things that we're saving ourselves from terror attacks based on it. He's taken in by these arguments. The one thing I have heard, even from Trump apologists that I have spoken to within Congress, is that Johnson and the like all work on him and have clout and convince him. Okay? So, I don't understand. If you don't follow my lead and put the screws to him publicly, certainly privately, there's only one direction for this man to go. But this is the mentality. You have a winning issue now. Remember, Democrats own the invasion, the inflation. When you're in power, and again, it's a big if, to rely on that is insane at this point, given what we see. But when you're in power, it's a little bit hard to win a government shutdown fight because, like, what are you fighting over? You have all three branches. Yeah, you don't have 60 votes, but that's kind of a nuance that's lost in the public. Here, it's like, they're killing the country, they're spying on us, they're invading us, they're making, they're destroying our quality of life. You could harness that against them. To block and tackle is a lot easier in politics than to govern. It always is, for better or for worse. Now is when you have the leverage on a lot of these issues. And this was perfect leverage. It's something that was personal to Trump, it's something he understood. It has bipartisan support. It goes away through a sunset. By the way, Trump didn't want that sunset, but okay. And yet, failure theater. Fake fights it, but then endorses it. And then now, they're going to hold a joint press conference. And here's their thing. What's their big plan? We're going to vote on a bill to prevent non-citizens from voting. Okay, well now, non-citizens are not allowed to vote under federal law. So you're not changing anything. Whatever, you know, cheating loopholes are used to, you know, have some of them vote here and there is not going to be self-executing by reaffirming current law. But moreover, this is a classic, another classic GOP swamp, faggot, Dole, Bush, McCain, Romney, McConnell, Boehner mentality. That you undermine and subvert our leverage on the reauthorizations, the debt ceilings, the budget bills in place for chase the squirrel. Here's another issue that's not in front of us and random and a standalone bill. Right? Defund is where you have the leverage. You want the left, you Biden, you want the GOP House to give you a debt ceiling increase. Well, here's our demands for that. You want a budget bill, here's the demands. You want reauthorization of FISA, NDAA, here's the demands. You want Ukraine funding, here's the demands. You see what I mean? Whereas if you say we want to pass a new law, okay, yeah, you could pass it in the House, the Senate will ignore it. Chase the squirrel. Distract. Screw us on the issues that matter and the way they matter at the time they matter. Oh, here's a standalone bill. Illegals aren't allowed to vote. Classic. Also, same thing. We can't have the fight now. Later, when I get in and govern. Oh, we don't want to rock the boat during an election year. That's the same gay mentality of the cuck Republican Party that the big, strong, masculine MAGA was supposed to avoid. I don't understand. What are we doing? What do you want me to do? Am I supposed to? So next week, when Johnson comes in and is like, we're doing lend-lease to Ukraine, am I supposed to say, Johnson's a piece of crap? Well, he's literally doing it with Trump support. So don't you want to take it to the top? Do you want to influence it? Do you want to change it? This is what I posed to some members of Congress last night. I said, you know, FISA is a little bit complicated because, you know, we don't have a public paper trail. It's a little bit of a game here. But, you know, I played the clip from Trump in South Carolina in February already. He's very clear. He's on record multiple times. I support Lend-Lease. And if they don't have the money to pay back, that's fine. That's literally word for word. That's fine. That's what he said. So I was like, if we just focus on Johnson and you don't, you know, have a unified front from the Freedom Caucus to say, hey, Trump, you got to knock it off and start, you know, letting him know you're not on his plantation, you're not going to get a different result. What is your plan to block Ukraine funding? Again, and the fact that Johnson is holding a press conference with Trump in Mar-a-Lago today, after screwing us on an issue Trump supposedly was on the other side of, and then, oh, here's a chase the squirrel. What does that tell you about the motion to vacate? And somebody's like, oh, no, if he screws us, we'll do motion to vacate. Yeah, but no, you won't. I mean, you might, but Trump has his back. This is the problem. How many more policy betrayals are we going to allow? Okay, we're almost 7 months out from the election. I'm sick of hearing this. Oh, Daniel, so just vote for Biden. Like, I didn't say that. Okay, that has nothing to do with anything. Not every second of life is that 10 minutes that you're at the voting booth 1 hour of one day, the first Tuesday in November. That's a choice, then fine. You feel you have no choice, go vote for Trump. But that means that we shouldn't pressure him to the right 7 months before the election? And you refuse to do it during the primary. So he felt no need to move to the right. So you better do it now. It just makes no sense to me. And by the way, Trump put out, it's like you have these psychotic random social media posts out of nowhere. He's like, we need to defund NPR. Okay. NPR. So look, Republicans for decades had these small ball things, you know, whenever we were at a big issue like Obamacare, defunding Obamacare, they would distract with, oh, the National Endowment of Arts and Humanities and NPR. It was like a bucket list dating back to the Gingrich era that they all wanted to defund. And then we're all for defunding them. But they're kind of, in the scheme of things, you're not going to change society with that. And they're not that expensive in terms of the, you know, budgetary cost. But whatever. It's like, dude, this guy promised it in every budget he submitted when he was president. And the bills he ultimately... supported and signed and had Mnuchin craft, not only funded Obamacare and the thing and the border invasion at the time, the issues of the time, the way they mattered at the time they mattered, but we didn't even get to chase the squirrel like defund NPR and the humanities and arts. In fact, they were increased under NPR funding was increased with his budgets. I mean, it's like, were you not president? Are we going to continue to allow ourselves to get mooned every second? And again, everyone takes this personal. It's like that analogy I gave you. You capture a gun. You're sick of the GOP. It's going, and now you have a Gatling gun that could totally mow down your enemy. And everyone's dancing around the gun. I'm like, okay, so could we use it? Like, shut up! Stop insulting the gun! Like, what? That's retarded. I mean, what's the point in championing a messiah if you don't use it? I mean, isn't he a messiah because he's going to do great things for you? But then you don't allow him to do great things for you. Trump has championed every gay mentality, mindset. We can't have government shutdown. Oh, it's going to risk the election. Oh, you know, wait until I get in. Oh, chase the squirrel. All the same stupid arguments. He is championed. It's the same thing. There's one difference between Trump and the pre-Trump establishment. And that difference makes it a greater indictment on my colleagues, the fact that they don't pressure him. And that is more than you know, your McCain's and Romney's. Trump does have a strong relationship with the GOP base, for better, for worse in that he gets them to stand down and go along with stupid things, but for better, that he does feel the pressure from them. This was a moniker we said ad nauseum during his presidency. I said, look, we pretty much got out of Trump what we demanded. When the few times that we organized and demanded things from him, he responded and he felt that pressure. I could tell you there were times he was given some of my articles in the Oval Office. And he thought they were pretty good. Just ideas on what to do about the border. And, you know, but if you don't get in his face and you make excuses and ignore and then attack anyone who tries to do it, then what are you going to get from him? You're not going to get anything. What's the point? We're going to keep doing this. Again, this is really bad because FISA and Ukraine are like two core issues, two issues that the left has no leverage to pass without us, and yet Trump has given away the farm. Am I supposed to just make fun out of Johnson today like my colleagues, but then ignore the 800-pound gorilla in the room? None of this makes any sense. But I want to delve into the mechanics of this program and how bad it is. So, folks, when you take a broad look at what we've done security-wise post 9/11, it basically follows the following principle: that we exacerbate the very problems that endanger our security, and then we use that problem to cast a wide net on civil liberties of all Americans. So after 9/11, we double and triple our immigration and visas from countries where they're going to come in. We elevate the Muslim Brotherhood to leadership positions in DHS and state, and now it basically runs the Biden administration. Oh, but oh my gosh, there might be a terrorist attack. So we treat you like animals at airports. And then now we have this FISA 702, which started in 2008. You know, we lived for many years without it. And now we are told that if we don't reauthorize it on April 19th, we're going to die and there's going to be terrorist attacks. And before we bring on our guests, I just want to illustrate the absurdity of this. This is the same administration that right now is leaving our front door open. And it's not just a speculative problem. We have everyday numerous examples of the most violent people coming in, both from the Middle East, North Africa, but also the Aragua gang in Venezuela. I mean, this is, everyone agrees this is a problem. I mean, the endless security threats, the crime, the gangs, the drugs. And it's like, oh, well, we need this to, spy in on, maybe there's Americans on the other line with foreigners that are involved in terrorism, or they're actually using drug trafficking a lot as their argument. And just to illustrate, NBC's reporting that there's an Afghan who was on the FBI terror watch list that came in March 2023, and the Border Patrol in California let him go. Let him go, and he's just been living here on the terror watch list, a member of Hezbi Islami, an Afghan terror group that is responsible for killing American soldiers there. And then finally ICE got a hold of him, but then he was let go by an immigration judge, so he's out on bond, able to roam the U.S. Pending his next court date. So the same government then turns around and is like, hey, we need to spy on Americans without a warrant because they might be involved in terrorism. Unreal, but unfortunately, GOP leadership buys into this. I wanted to bring on today a person who was fighting this before it was cool. Actually, last reauthorization in 2018, Congressman Warren Davidson from the 8th District of Ohio. It's the southwest corner there. He's a former Army Ranger and has been a prominent member of the Freedom Caucus fighting for freedom, particularly on this issue. And he's with us from the cloakroom today before the big vote. Hey, Congressman, thanks so much for joining us for the first time at Blaze Media.
Yeah, always an honor. Thank you, Daniel.
Alrighty, so you heard my intro there. Could you give our audience just a broad summation, because it's complicated to a lot of people what this does. Obviously, FISA itself doesn't expire. It's this Section 702. What exactly is it, and how broad is it?
Yeah, so go back. FISA really predates the Patriot Act, but it was kind of expanded and reauthorized by the Patriot Act. And remember, that was passed right after 9/11. It only had one no vote in the Senate, and it had 63 no votes in the House. So basically, both parties failed. Go back to 2018. There were many of us that tried to stop the reauthorization without major reform. And unfortunately, that wasn't successful, so it was reauthorized. In 2020, a different section, Section 215, the business records provision, lapsed. They didn't stop spying on business records. And talking to Bill Barr, the attorney general at the time, he said that FISA doesn't grant them any authority to do anything. It's a limitation of it. So they're going to keep spying on everybody. They're just not going to do it the way that it's prescribed by the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. So that's what we're up against, is essentially a security state, a police state, if you want to use the word. But it's been more benign until recently. We see it's been weaponized against, you know, the Trump campaign back in 2016 and 17. We see that it's been weaponized against ordinary Americans. And the pretext for collecting this is they get a warrant to say, we are going after these people or these groups of people and related to terrorists. But there's about a quarter million of these named individuals and then other keywords that are searched for. And what happens is, because that's really broad, any reference there gets swept up. All the communications involving American citizens get swept up. And then they say, look, we've already got this data, so it's not unlawful for us to query it. Now, query is another word for search. And the people that want to stop us from, frankly, reasserting the Fourth Amendment, which guarantees that you have to get a warrant or subpoena to search an American citizen's data, they say that, no, we already have the data. It was lawfully collected, so we aren't searching it. We're querying it. Well, whose name do you put into the database to query it? An American citizen's name. You're not searching for Osama bin Laden or some terrorist. You're searching for the name of an American citizen. And that's what we're trying to say. You got to get a warrant. If you want to search that data for an American citizen, just like you would for everything else, you have to get a warrant. So today we're going to frame this debate about something else. Other than that, if you're in the Intel Committee And then you're going to frame it a little differently if you're more privacy oriented. And thankfully, it's one of the handful of things that doesn't break on party lines. So you'll see Republicans and Democrats divided on this. But the people that are aligned with the Constitution on this issue are the ones that say, if you want to search for an American's data, you got to get a warrant. And frankly, you shouldn't be able to bypass it by buying the data around it. That amendment was disallowed, and it's called the data broker loophole. And we're going to have a vote on that next week. That's a bill that I'm a sponsor on with Zoe Lofgren, Pramila Jayapal, Andy Biggs, Thomas Massey, and others.
I mean, I don't understand how that doesn't pass with everyone's support. So we all know that the private tech companies, we know from the COVID censorship cases that they completely worked with the government to censor and spy on Americans. They have all the data. So the notion that, oh, well, the Fourth Amendment prevents me from getting it as a government actor, but if I just rope in a third party, I could somehow access that is absurd. But that was jettisoned from the bill. That was in the House Judiciary Committee bill. It was taken out of this one. You're not even getting an amendment vote, but it will be a standalone vote. I mean, why would anyone oppose that amendment?
Well, we'll see next week, thankfully, who exactly is opposed. And frankly, by being on a rule bill, they'll be able to offer amendments. So they won't even be able to have the excuse, well, you know, I'd be for it if. Well, then where was your amendment? You know, and so I'm glad we're going to get a vote. I wish it was part of this. And frankly, part of the reason that it's not part of the FISA debate is it would be comprehensive. It would be far broader than just FISA. It would be, I don't care what your excuse for doing it is, whether it's under 702 or any other authority,
yep,
you can't buy American citizens' data and bypass the need to get a warrant. And the administration does that on all kinds of things. And, you know, here's what you see is programs that have been publicly disclosed, to comply with this. Some of the companies are like, look, if you want me to filter everything and change it because you sent me some new stuff, that cost me a fortune. I'm not going to do it. So here's just everything. You guys sort through it and get whatever you want. And they're turning over everybody's data. And this is where, you know, the third party doctrine court decisions are flawed. The Supreme Court failed on that by saying, well, you know, once you've shared your information with a third party, you no longer have an expectation of privacy. And that's so fallacious. I mean, just because I bought a book off of Amazon doesn't mean that I think the federal government should know which books I bought from Amazon. You know, and Amazon shouldn't be able to sell that information to data brokers without my informed consent. So there is so much work left to be done to defend freedom and reassert the Fourth Amendment. The right to privacy is there, and the Fourth Amendment is supposed to be a safeguard against it. And look, freedom surrenders rarely reclaims. Today, we have a chance to make some progress if we can pass this warrant requirement.
Sure. And obviously, we'll see what happens with the amendment vote. It's still in flux, you know, any hour at this point. And then, you know, even if it does pass, the Senate obviously will balk because both the Republicans and Democrats are kind of more bought in by the IC community on that side of the Capitol. You know, so whether Johnson would bring the Senate version to the floor afterwards is something we're going to have to see. But as of now, I want people to understand the threats. You know, you go back in time, you know, I would have been like anyone else post 9/11. Oh, my gosh, these Islamic terrorists and everything. And I would have thought, and I think I did think at the time Snowden originally came out with this revelation. Well, OK, it's an American who's roped in because he's on the phone with an Al-Shabaab terrorist. Right. But explain to our audience that this is a lot broader than that. And how it could rope in ordinary Americans. Simply, you're pinged, your email is pinged by a spam or anything by an organization that's foreign. Or like we've already seen, they've spied on pro-Israel advocacy. So, you know, it's not just foreign, like something that's a terrorist. It could be an ally, it could be innocuous. But if our government has reason in their minds to spy on them, you can get roped into that.
Yeah, I mean, and look, here's one of the problems that it's not clear that we're fully protecting people from with this reauthorization is discovery. Let's say somebody's accused of a crime in America, and then some of the evidence that was collected under 702, warrantless searches. The defense has a hard time accessing that in any case, in any of the content, and you don't have the same clear path to obtaining exculpatory evidence. And so those are some of the reforms that we're trying to get into the bill. So look, there's meaningful reform that could be done here, But the real threat is that A, the warrant requirement could fail, and B, that they could expand it even further. So the three amendments that the Intelligence Committee got to have a vote on today expand it further. So if you use a Wi-Fi hotspot, you know, and in any communication across that Wi-Fi hotspot is now swept up communication. So if you mention anything related to drug trafficking, the word fentanyl, for example, you know, that somehow can be swept up because it relates to, you know, foreign cartel activity. And, you know, these are dangerous amendments. And if we do want to stop people at the border, we should be doing that with a direct border security issue, not a, you know, Waltz's amendment that says it's supposed to stop illegals. The reality is it's got a risk to everyone entering the United States, yep, including U.S. citizens returning home. So everything about it is designed to be much more expansive and cause even further harm to American citizens' liberty.
It's truly unbelievable. And also what bothers me is this. You know, again, I was more of a security hawk. You go back 15, 20 years. And yeah, okay, maybe sometimes you could violate something, but yeah, we just want our security, right? It's conceptual. And then obviously, you know, what's conceptual turns into reality. But what I don't understand is this is not just conceptual. We're living through it. Talk about some of the background here that, so, I mean, the FBI has conducted about 3.4 million warrantless searches of Americans in just the year 2021. You had the testimony last year by the DOJ Inspector General Michael Horowitz, by the way, no relation, testified before the House Judiciary Committee that his audit found an error rate of nearly 30% in these 3.4 million FISA queries. What's the consequence of that?
Yeah, nothing. No one ever gets in trouble. I mean, we for a long time, we've had, you know, every time we do anything on intelligence reauthorization, we try to do this amendment that simply has a reporting requirement. And it tells it says, tell us, even in a classified setting, who accessed the database inappropriately and what consequence was it? So let's say you got a new hire, you trained them the right way, and you know, well, they messed up and did it wrong. Okay, great. We just retrained them. But let's say you get somebody that's got like a, you know, girlfriend issue or whatever, and they query it. And no, that's wrong. Did you discipline them? Who was it? How many times have they done that? That level of reporting doesn't happen. So let's say somebody does something really malicious in there, and now somebody winds up on a terrorist watch list because of some of this stuff, and it's malicious. Did you fire them? Did you prosecute them? They will not even tell us that they've done anything because they don't hold anyone accountable in any way, shape, or form, and they don't reply to the level of accountability that they're supposed to have here to Congress. We do know that some of these things do happen because they're in the Inspector General's reports.
It's unbelievable to me that, again, it's not just hypothetical. We know they're doing this. And the thing is, look, I'm a big hawk on Islamic terror. But the reality is, this is an administration that's now advocating for this. But the administration is saturated with Iranian spies. I mean, you got Tabatabai, that woman who's the chief of staff for the Undersecretary of Special Operations. There's a whole bunch of them. There's a whole Iranian spy network. So I'm a little bit confused here. Does anyone on our side really believe that this administration, that their main focus of this is Iranian terrorism or people like me who don't believe in the vaccines? I mean, like, we already have proof of this. I mean, haven't they used this for people that were at the Capitol on January 6th who didn't even do anything wrong?
Yeah, I mean, they've used every kind of authority they could to go after folks. And a lot of it really was third-party doctrines. And when you look at the direction that FinCEN gave to, you know, Bank of America and others that collected Americans' bank records and shared it without a warrant or a subpoena and said, oh, yeah, these are the people that bought stuff in the D.C. area on January 5th, 6th, or 7th. And they said, well, could you further refine that and see if people bought things at like Cabela's or Bass Pro or maybe purchased a Bible? And, you know, these are real things that have happened. And for that reason, when this Congress formed, we created the Weaponization Committee. It's great to get to serve on that with Chairman Jordan. And it is making a difference. It is making some of this stuff known, but shame on us if we don't do something about it. And I will say, look, there are now criminal penalties in here, but the downside is even if these things pass, who's the enforcer of them? And they're the people that are weaponizing the government. And it's not clear from the way that these are being adopted that they wouldn't just be abused against the whistleblowers that are trying to make some of this stuff public to Congress. So it really is a dangerous thing. It's one of the most consequential votes we're going to have this Congress, period, is what are we doing about restoring the Fourth Amendment?
I mean, this is my problem, people's inability to learn new things and open up to reality. Like, I kind of bristled when I heard Ron Paul talk, you know, about 20 years ago on this type of stuff. Nah, you know, our government's not doing that. But, I mean, the last couple of years, it's undeniable that's actually their main focus is that they can't be trying to protect us from terrorism because you literally have top administration officials that are in bed with the Iranian regime. I don't understand that. And this is, Warren, where I'm just getting into with the speaker. There's a mentality from the speaker I can't relate to. And this is just not just on this issue. He said, I want to be clear about what happens if we fail this week. The Senate is prepared to move a clean extension. And if the House doesn't pass our bill, we will be forced to accept because we cannot allow the vital national security tool to go dark. So here's what I don't understand. He's expressed this on every government funding bill, and now he's expressing it on reauthorization bills. How could you ever win a debate if you tell the other side that you're more scared of not reaching an agreement than they are, that you're scared, whatever that deadline that you feel is, whether it's a reauthorization, whether it's a government funding, it seems to be Johnson's modus operandi is we can't. So if you telegraph that message, here's what I understand. Let's say Trump becomes president. And let's say, you know, best case scenario, and they win the Senate, 52 or so seats, and you have the House, you know, it won't be a huge majority, but let's say it's bigger than what you have now. But they're not going to have 60 seats. They're not going to have anywhere close to that. So you're going to have some sort of brinkmanship. If we have this mentality that we can't go over the deadline, how are we ever going to get anything?
Yeah, look, you know, anyone can find an excuse. Leaders find a way, and we're seeing a lot of excuses, unfortunately. And, you know, it's really basic on negotiating. I mean, if everyone knows you're going to fold, you really don't get a lot of leverage in the negotiation. It really is important. And look, speaking of that, I got to get to the floor and try to get a little input into this debate here while it's still
well,
live.
Well, give them
look,
hell.
Thanks for covering it and making it known. And
thanks for making
we'll
a difference.
Today.
And definitely keep us updated. God bless.
Yeah, you too. Thanks, Daniel.
Take care. So again, that was Congressman Warren Davidson from Ohio, one of the few good guys, really a pioneer in this, fighting it before it was cool. And I mean, the thing is, there's this notion that there's nothing we can do. But there's bigger issues and there's smaller issues. There's issues like welfare and entitlements and dependency and, you know, that affects a lot of people, tougher issues. Then there's issues like this that, I mean, nobody wants the government doing that. I mean, I wouldn't say nobody. There are people brainwashed. But the point is, I mean, this is a very popular issue. You know, we're at a funny crossroads where enough of the grassroots left, not the establishment left, but the grassroots left, still opposes this on principle because there's still this perception, like from the Ilhan Omar types and AOC types, that it will somehow rope in legitimately bad guys. But in fact, it's mainly targeting us. Now, as time goes on, Democrats will completely support it when they realize it's only targeting people like us. But for now, we do have this window, and it's such a winning issue. I mean, remember, the FISA court itself has opinions saying that, what is that? I think 230,000 times it was used inappropriately. And the Inspector General's own report that 30% of the 3.4 million queries in 1 year were inappropriate. I mean, how hard is it for Trump to say, I will I will support motion to vacate. Tell them this publicly and privately. If you do not, now we don't know what's going to happen as of this moment, you know, whether it doesn't pass the House, this the Biggs Amendment, or it does and the Senate balks, either way, final passage, you cannot support a bill that at least doesn't have that provision for a warrant. And I would argue, you know, Warren was being diplomatic because they're giving him a standalone. Again, it's always a standalone vote on the private data, but that's the whole enchilada. He's right, because that's a lot more than just 702. They're using that across many authorities. We saw that with COVID. They were spying on Americans. They knew everyone's whereabouts with the social distancing from Perchings. That needs to be banned categorically. So I don't know if that passes the House. But again, that's not going to go the distance. That's not going to be signed into law. The Biden admin wants this reauthorization. You have to hold it up and condition it. You can't do this standalone business. But it doesn't have to be this way. We have a lot of popular issues. We have leverage, and we have one man that has leverage over Johnson. You put that all together, and I don't understand why we're, you know, we always focus, we oppose Biden in the abstract, or we oppose spying in the abstract. We think the Republicans suck in the abstract. It's funny. I see next week with Ukraine. I could totally go, Johnson's selling us out in Ukraine. Everyone's like, yeah, yeah. Trump's supporting Lend-Lease. Shut up, Daniel. Well, wait, why are you getting defensive? Shouldn't you be more inclined to take the fight to the man that A, has more clout within the party, and B, is more likely to, you know, answer positively to your pressure than Johnson will? It's like, I could put out, the Republican Party is now saddling up to the homosexual log cabin group. And they're like, yeah, the GOP sucks. But then if I say, well, it's actually Melania Trump is headlining the fundraiser. Shut up. I mean, again, we're not going to change anything if everything we hated about the GOP of yesteryear, and we, you know, would aggressively contend with it. But now that Trump does it, we run away, like specifically avoid making people aware of it. Well, then how are you going to change anything? Doesn't make any sense. But broadly speaking, it's just important to recognize the absurdity of what our government is doing with security. That they, Johnson has the nerve to say, oh my gosh, this is frantic. We cannot suffer a minute of a day going over April 19th. And actually, I wish it were a cliff. It actually is not really such a cliff. Most of it's recertified for another year. I was going to get into that with Warren, but you know, he has to speak on the floor in opposition to this. So I wasn't going to hold him. But it's a little bit more complicated than what they're making it out to be. Okay? It's a little bit more complicated. And what are we going to do with this? What are we going to do with a man who believes that we cannot allow a domestic spying program to lapse for a day because of national security, but we could totally give up our leverage on a 90-10 issue where the amount of security threats that we've let in our country is insane? I mean, think about it. I could go through every day more of this stuff. Kenol Baptiste, 30-year-old Haitian illegal, is accused of stabbing two men in and around an apartment complex in Middletown, New York, Monday. He entered the U.S. about 8 months ago, and police are still trying to track back how, where, and when. We let him in, an illegal Mexican immigrant who has been deported at least 8 times, according to Ohio's Butler County Sheriff's Office. Actually, I think that might be Davidson's district. And arrested nearly a dozen times, is now facing murder charges following the discovery of a man's body in Ohio. Fareem Garcia Gutierrez is being held at the Butler County Jail on charges of aggravated murder. And again, like, how is a guy able to come back in 9 times? The reason is because there's no deterrent. If we had interior enforcement, if we cut off the magnets, the jobs, these guys wouldn't come. Why do we not have an emergency for every Republican state legislature to hold a special session on ridding themselves of illegal immigration? And that's what we should have expended our capital on with the budget bill, even more so than H.R. 2, is affirming a state's right to deport. That's the only way. Otherwise, there's no amount of border security you have. They'll keep coming back. Another guy, Perez Estrada, illegally arrived in the U.S. from Mexico about 2 weeks ago. He was charged in the entering after being previously deported, and he was let go pending a future court case. Chicago media is now reporting that he's charged with murdering his wife by nearly decapitating her, which is a modality of murder that's very endemic of some of these Latin American gangbangers. Five illegal aliens were arrested after a mob attack in New York City's Randall's Island Migrant Shelter. They attacked another rival there. This is what's going on. I mean, this is like, yeah, they're comparing it to like your Ellis Island, those people coming around the turn of the century, kissing American soil. Yeah. Yeah, that's what we're letting in. The most violent Haitian, Venezuelan gangs, Middle Easterners. Oh, but if you don't do the program that didn't exist before 2008, we're going to die even one day of it. This is the mentality of the Republican speaker, but again, he's being enabled. I mean, you could go through stories of this every day. And if I could do this, Republican leaders could do this. How easy it would be to message through a fight, much more so than when you're in control, because then you're blamed for it. A Bronx gangbanger who racked up 9 arrests this year is free on the streets of New York City after repeatedly being sprung without bail. Latin Kings member Emmanuel Santiago keeps ending up in cuffs even as he faces 7 open cases in the Bronx on charges ranging from intent to sell dangerous drugs, grand larceny of cars, possession of weapons, allegation of domestic violence. This is from the New York Post. So he's all over the place. We have an 18-year-old illegal alien was arrested in connection to the murder of a California man that was found mutilated inside his car in January, according to the Fresno County Sheriff's Office. On Friday, April 5th, homicide detectives with the Fresno County Sheriff's Office arrested a teen for the murder of 25-year-old, I can't pronounce the guy's name. And this guy's an illegal alien from El Salvador. By the way, you know El Salvador, just like Venezuela, their crime rate plummeted because they exported other people here. I mean, it would almost be funny if it weren't dangerous. They will let in the Muslim Brotherhood and 3 million Muslims rampaging in the streets. You have this Dearborn imam chanting death to America and, you know, intifada. But then they're like, oh, yeah, there's a lot of national security threats. Let's go and purchase the data of political opponents, of Americans, of abortion, anti-abortion activists, January 6ers. This is the anarcho-tyranny that is being enabled and funded. And the notion that we could just sit back and squander our messaging and leverage on popular issues now in the hopes that somehow Trump will win and somehow his governance will be different than the first term is just absurd. It's the same old nonsense. I mean, it's almost like he's doing it on purpose. We're just reaffirming, making every gay GOP argument and excuse great again. Again, if Trump both publicly and privately made it clear to Johnson that you will not sign a final bill of FISA reauthorization without these reforms, and you will not fund any Ukraine funding, he wouldn't do it. He couldn't. But it's not just that Trump's remaining silent. He's literally—do you think it's a coincidence that on the day of what, you know, Congressman Davidson said is one of the biggest votes of the session, hours later, Johnson's on a plane to Mar-a-Lago to chase a squirrel on some random standalone bill to reaffirm that non-citizens can't vote. Do you think that's by accident? It's like in Deuteronomy, you had the six cities of refuge. You know, back in ancient Israel, if someone, you know, murdered, you're put to death. But let's say it was an accident. So, you know, that's kind of, you know, you don't deserve death because it was an accident, but you were kind of careless, so you deserve a punishment. You had to run, so the relative of the victim had the right to go and avenge the blood, unless you had to run to that city of shelter. There were six of them set up. A city of refuge. So Mar-a-Lago has literally become a city of refuge for every GOP scumbag to rape us and then run there afterwards and get his endorsement and his support and go chase the squirrel. How is that not negative efficacy? How is that not going backwards from the Tea Party era? That now the same things, they could do the same stuff, but you, rather than Trump using his clout to browbeat them, and you see when it works, like on the Lankford bill. You had Don Jr. out there, we're going to take names, and we're going to primary everyone who votes for this. Where is this? We're going to primary everyone who votes for, not just against the Biggs Amendment, but for any final bill that doesn't have the Biggs Amendment in it. And Ukraine Lend-Lease, we're going to primary anyone who's, well, I guess the reason Don Jr. doesn't do that is because you would have to primary Trump himself. But you get the point. I don't... You know, we started out the week, the big news was the over the weekend, Trump, you know, saying, basically throwing the abortion issue under the bus. And people were giving all these excuses and fancy political scientific arguments. And I said, any argument you give as to why he's doing that has to also accommodate why he's embracing the log cabins, why he's embracing Bruce Jenner and Bud Light at a time that we're winning on those issues, why he's embracing Ukraine funding, why he's going weak now on FISA, why he's going weak on Obamacare, why he's so married to the vaccines, why he's making all these bad endorsements. It's a broad trend. And you didn't want to sort it out during the primary because that would be viewed as taking him down and at the expense of DeSantis. And God forbid, should we elect someone as horrible as DeSantis? Okay, fine. And you can't do it, you know, when you're up against the election. But now's the perfect time. And again, if you don't have a compelling narrative, how are you going to change? Meaning, absent a compelling narrative where you harness something like this that's bipartisan, that's popular, and especially you juxtapose, wait a minute. So Biden, you're going to spy on Americans under the guise of national security while letting in all these national security threats? That's the way you communicate with people. But absent something like that, you're going to get the status quo. And the status quo of the last five elections is the Democrats are winning. Again, you take the Rasmussen poll out of the RCP average. Dems are down. Biden is downright ahead in the RCP average. Dems are downright favored to win the House. And we know that Democrats have recently been overperforming by several points because of their early voting, ballot harvesting, ground game that's just so much stronger than the Republican ground game. So what is your solution? Now, we talked about yesterday with Andy Roth, the states. The states is a lot we can do to interpose. But all of our... In other words, you can't put all of your hopes and aspirations into Trump. Say he's the greatest. He's... Daniel, everyone in the party supports him. He controls the party, Daniel. Nobody wants DeSantis. Fine, so then own it. If he is everything, then utilize him. And stop excusing him either remaining silent, tacitly supporting Johnson, actively supporting him, depending on the issue. Take the fight to him. Do you want to change things or not? And I think for most of my colleagues, you know the answer. But here, for ourselves, we've had a productive week. We'll continue that next week. Give us a 5-star rating. Send this show to every one of your friends and relatives. Till Monday, have a terrific weekend, and God bless y'all.